Bay Area, this is Jonathan Kuminga. You're listening to Wheeler and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Coming off of a great workout, apparently, Dibs.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kuminga.
Down in Miami.
Yeah.
Maybe great. The Heat were in attendance. Maybe they want in.
Yeah, I don't know. I was looking, though. I did a project, and then you probably wouldn't even care about all the things that I was researching, but one of the things I was looking at was last 25 years, World Series appearances, NBA Finals appearances, Super Bowl appearances.
Okay.
And the Miami Heat have been to 7, and Coach Spo was a part of 6 of those.
Wow. Yeah.
So as we talk about Miami, and you look at just the last 25 years, and there are, in the NBA, I'm looking at 13 teams who haven't been to the NBA Finals in those 25 years.
They've been to 7.
Miami's been to 7.
So,
Lakers 8, Miami 7, Warriors 6.
Wow.
And then you've got Cleveland 5, San Antonio 5, and then Brooklyn 4.
Wow, Brooklyn.
Wow. I'm sorry, Boston 4. I apologize. Boston does have the 2.
Yeah, the 2 with the Jason Kidd, Richard Jefferson, Kenyon Martin era.
Yep.
Yeah, because the Heat, 2 with Jimmy Butler, 1 in the bubble, which maybe you call it a half. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But that one, the one a couple of years ago when they lost to the Nuggets. And then, of course, the 4 with LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. And then the original Wade and Shaq one where they beat the Mavericks.
That's right.
Was that 06?
Correct.
That?
Look 06. At you. And 4 in a row, which is...
All 4 LeBron years. They went to the finals.
Right. And they went 2-2.
Lost the first one, then won the next 2, and then lost the last.
That's right. So I was looking at cities who have had the most appearances over the 3 different sports, just trying to see, how lucky we are.
We are lucky.
Yeah, and I think I have us as 3rd. Boston's got 17 appearances.
So this is since the turn of the century.
Correct.
Okay.
NBA Finals, Super Bowl, and World Series appearances. Just appearances.
Not wins.
Right. Yeah. Do you get there? And Boston's got 17, LA 15, and then it's us with 13. And
this is just the big 3.
Correct. Yeah, and there's some wrinkles in there, like the Patriots go to Boston, they get credit. Boston gets credit. And
Foxborough.
Yeah, Oakland actually has 4. And in that 4, 3 of them are the Warriors when the Warriors were in Oakland. Mm. I was just thinking about Oakland as its own entity, and you had the 1 Raiders, and then you had the 3 Warriors.
So San Francisco gets to count the Warriors
them,
ones while they were in Oakland.
Well, because I did San Francisco
claim
first.
Anything else.
Oakland can claim those. I mean, it would only be 1 more.
Yeah.
And Oakland doesn't get to claim the Niners. Like, no, that's going to be a no. And Oakland doesn't get to claim the Giants.
No.
So I just, did a separate Oakland with the 3 that they had with the Warriors to see how they compare to, like, Milwaukee. He's only got 2. Atlanta, they've only got 2.
I'd give Oakland the Warriors 4th while they were in
San Francisco.
The other one while they were in San Francisco.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
And, other like big markets, like Phoenix only has 4. And, Detroit only has 4 appearances.
Wow.
You had the 1 Tigers and you had, I guess, 3 3 Pistons.
How many cities or regions, and we're being pretty specific when we talk about a region that has all 3 of those teams, an NBA team, an NFL team, and an NBA team. How many of those regions are there across the 3 major sports that have 1 of each?
LA.
Yeah.
New York, and they've got more than 3.
Yeah.
San Francisco, Philadelphia, Boston, Miami, Houston, Dallas, Cleveland, Phoenix. So it's more than you think.
They're like 10, something like that?
Yeah. Detroit.
Yeah.
That'd be 11. And, Milwaukee's an interesting one because I gave them the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
And you got the Bucks and you've got the Brewers. So that is kind of an ish. Atlanta, they got the Braves and the Falcons and the Hawks. And so there's more than you think.
Yeah.
Chicago's got 3. So now we're up to a quiet 12 or 13.
Yeah.
But just something I was looking at to try to, pass the time in the morning. My toddler's watching Dora. And so I'm at the kitchen table just, running through some of my goofy handwritten stuff.
That's
anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just looking here, and it looks like we got some sound that just came in from Bob Melvin. He, in the dugout about 20 minutes ago, reacting or telling the media about the Landon Roop injury. And if you're just joining us, Landon Roop, on the IL for 15 days, the 15-day injured list with right elbow inflammation. This always sets sirens off in baseball clubs because anytime a pitcher has any issue, no matter what it is, if it's called discomfort, if it's called irritation, if it's called inflammation, it just hurts, whatever it is, if it's your pitching elbow, it's a big deal. So Bob Melvin sat down in front of the media in the Giants dugout about 20 minutes ago and was asked about Roop's elbow. Here's the Giants skipper.
Some elbow issues. We think it's pretty minor. You know, he pitched. I took him out after the fifth because he was feeling it a little bit the last time. But I think we caught it at the right time. We're kind of considering maybe just skipping him a turn. But, you know, with the IL being 15 days, it basically comes down to two starts. We're hopeful that he's going to be able to come out after that. Bothering him with probably his last couple of starts, and based on where he is in the season, the innings, and so forth, just felt like it was a prudent thing to do, but hopefully we caught it at the right time.
That's interesting.
Ah, the innings.
Well, he says it's been bothering him the last couple of outings. It felt like the prudent thing to do now. Yeah, it's definitely smart now. I'm wondering why it didn't happen earlier. If it was bothering him the last two starts, why didn't they do it after the first time it bothered him?
Maybe coming out of the start, it didn't bother him that much. And then now, you know, you pitch on the 12th and you had the All-Star break.
I wasn't thinking about the All-Star break.
Yeah, All-Star break. And so you come out 10 days later on the 22nd and...
Give it a go.
You give it a go and he goes 5 and he pitched well. And then you come out of that one and it still is bothering you. And maybe it's bothering you a little bit more and you think, well, he just had 10 days to... really rest it and shut it down. And so it's prudent to now, instead of skipping him and giving him another 10 days, ostensibly, from his last start, you'd skip him and then you bring him back. He'd have basically 10 days. Now you just give him the full 15. So you're really only giving him one more start where he's not going to be out there and you have the ability to replace him on the roster.
Yes. Yes. They were thinking just skip one start. Don't even bring anybody else on and then bring him back. But they said, you know what? It's worth it to put him on the IL, get somebody else in here. But he also mentioned in there, Dibs, the innings. I mean, they're aware of it, whether or not they think it's a big deal or not, they're aware of it. And I'd be interested in whenever he does come back, how this kind of plays things out. Because I was thinking maybe for a bit they might be thinking about trying to find ways to space his starts out, and whether it is, you know, maybe pushing him back every so often when they have an off day, or maybe it is every once in a while having a bullpen game, you using an opener and bringing somebody up, whether it's Beck or it's Seymour or whoever, to eat up 5 innings out of the pen as a way to give him a rest. And now you have this elbow injury as a concern, and you know they're aware of those innings numbers. He's approaching a career high as a pro. I wonder how the Giants might kind of change their plan or their strategy around Roop whenever he does come back, assuming that he does come back and is fine.
And I wonder how much the fact that, you know, Hayden Birdsong had to go down played into this as well, because you need to replace Hayden Birdsong, and so maybe you want to protect Landon Roop a little bit, and so you give him the 15 days knowing that already you're going to have to add somebody in your rotation, and you want to make sure you do have Landon Roop down the stretch, because I don't know how soon Birdsong can come back and what he would need to do to convince them that he's a different pitcher, because not only was he, I guess, unsuccessful, he was wildly, wildly erratic.
That was terrible.
I mean, he's missing targets by feet, not inches. And so,
and like 4 straight pitches.
Right. And like couldn't get an out the other day. So, you know, you're already looking to replace one. Maybe you protect Roop and hope that he can still be solid in August.
One of the other things that Bob Melvin was asked, again, about 25 minutes ago, down at 3rd and King at Oracle Park in the home dugout, how would you describe the rotation right now, Bob? Here's what he said.
In flux. So we have to cover Sunday. We're probably going to have to cover Tuesday. You know, we do have an extensive bullpen right now. We'll see if we can cover the Sunday game out of the bullpen, and then probably Tuesday we're going to have to make a move. Just depends on how it goes here these first two games. We have to be prepared for anything.
Okay, interesting from Bob. So we get a little bit of an answer. He says we're going to have to cover Sunday and Tuesday. He didn't say this, Dibs, but I would imagine that means Verlander will throw Monday, which means they're moving Verlander up a day. Because Sunday was going to be Birdsong's spot. Monday was going to be Roop's spot. Tuesday would be Verlander's spot. But because they had yesterday off, they can move Verlander up from Tuesday to Monday and have him pitch on his normal rest, which means they have to cover Sunday and they have to cover Tuesday. He said Sunday likely going to be a bullpen game, but probably Tuesday would mean another move. And the way my mind works, even if his ERA is in the fours in minor league, in AAA dibs, my mind immediately goes to Carson Wisdom. Maybe that's when we see his big league debut.
It's possible, and you know we'll have to keep an eye on the AAA rotation. And you know he was, I think, scheduled to either pitch today or tomorrow. So if you don't see him pitch today, and you mentioned earlier he's not the starting pitcher that's listed, if he doesn't go tomorrow, then I think you can take a hard look at that and think he might be the guy who gets tabbed on Tuesday to then come up here. He'd have extra rest, and you would have to make a move on your 40-man roster. I don't know what the status is of Gerard Encarnacion, if he's still hurt or if he's...
I think he's in a rehab in Sacramento right now.
Okay.
Actually.
So that might be a guy who you bring off the 40-man. I don't know if he really fits on your team anymore. Wilmer's your right-hand hitting DH, and you've got Luis Matos, who's a right-handed bat that you might like as much, and Rafi Devers playing first again tonight, so you don't need, thankfully, you don't need Encarnacion to play first base, so he might be the odd man out as you get into this next week.
Let's see. Encarnacion is... He's been playing... Let's see. Where are we here? Yeah, he has been taking at-bats with the River Cats since July 18th, so he's been down there on a rehab assignment for about a week. So he is probably slowly working his way back. Maybe there was a roster move that just sent him to AAA. Maybe he's just there for now. I'm not 100% certain on that. But he is playing right now, so he is potentially available for the Giants if they need that. But you're talking about potential 40-man roster moves. He is one. There was also... Is Tom Murphy still on the 40-man?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he hasn't played for you in over a year. So maybe you consider just, all right, Tom, sorry, your injury has taken so long, but we need another spot. So there are some options that they could turn to, but you're right. The Wisenhunt decision would require a move more than just optioning somebody and bringing him up. You have to then create space on a 40-man roster spot, which means you have to dismiss somebody, and they're open to go and get claimed by somebody else if you do that. So we'll see how they go about it. But that is a possibility. The fact that Bob Melvin says Tuesday will likely require another move means the answer to Tuesday's question, Dibs, is not currently on the roster. So one way or another, it's exciting. I mean, maybe he's talking about a trade.
Maybe.
Maybe he's, another move could just be Buster getting busy.
Because the trade deadline is next Thursday, right?
Correct.
So you could make a move before then, and you could acquire a starting pitcher, and you could trade somebody on your 40-man and not have to make a corresponding move. So a lot of different things that can happen, but the fact that you're going to have a Sunday bullpen game tells me that you're looking at maybe Sean Gelly gets the start, or Tristan Beck, who just got recalled, or maybe a combination of the two, and you start to piece it together. And one thing about the trade deadline, I don't know if you really need a left-handed reliever anymore. Joey Lucchese's been really solid since he came up, and you know, now you got Matt Gage, the lefty, who is, he's able to go out there, and he's got a pretty wicked curveball. I think that you quietly suddenly have a little bit more left-handed depth in the pen than you did a couple weeks ago.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Again, Landon Roop on the 15-day injured list with right elbow inflammation. He is a right-handed pitcher, so that is a little bit scary. Bob Melvin says no structural damage. They hope that he's only out for the minimum amount of time that you have to be out on the 15-day IL, 15 days, retroactive to 2 days ago. So what, we determined that was August 7th or 8th, whenever he would be eligible to come back. The Giants hope that's when he's good. Bob Melvin said that means two missed starts, the one coming up this weekend and then the one after that, and then he should be good is what they're hoping for. We shall see. And then when he's talking about the state of their rotation in general, he said in flux. Sunday is going to be a bullpen game most likely. Monday will be Verlander, and Tuesday The answer is probably not currently on the team. There will be a move one way or another, I would imagine, to start the game coming up on Tuesday. This leads in, Dibs, to, I think, an interesting question that we were batting around earlier today. I was thinking about this idea of pressure because all three teams in the Bay, I think, have big moments coming up. We spend a lot of time talking about Kuminga and the Warriors. I think Mike Dunleavy is under a fair share of pressure right now. We've been talking about the Niners in training camp a lot this week. I think there's a number of people there who are under a fair share of pressure. Brock Purdy is one of them. I think you can make a case that Robert Saleh is under some pressure. Maybe Kyle Shanahan himself too, but Robert Saleh specifically on the defensive side of the football. And the Giants, I mean, this is a group that is a talented roster and are fighting for a postseason spot. I don't know how you feel, Dibs, but specifically on the Giants, I feel like there's some pressure on Buster Posey. Not in a bad way, not as if he's got to prove himself or he's going to be out of a job, but I think Buster's looking at these next 6 days before the trade deadline, knowing the decision that he makes one way or another could be the difference in a playoff appearance or not, and that to me feels like quite a bit of pressure.
A little bit of pressure, I guess, and for me, the pressure comes from job security and expectations, and Buster's just, he's kind of easing into the gig, I think, and so, you know, even if things don't go right, he doesn't make a move, the pitching help doesn't come, and you miss the playoffs, I don't think that he feels the heat. It's a disappointment, but not having given up a lot of your assets to try to make a desperation move, I think would certainly help his cause insofar as, you know, you wouldn't be going all in for this year and having it not work out.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Giants, say they don't make a big move ahead of the deadline, and they already got Devers. Maybe they make a you know, lower end move, and it's not this crazy gigantic deal, and that's probably what's going to happen in my opinion, and they miss the playoffs. I'm not going to turn and point to Buster Posey for not making another move as the reason why they missed the playoffs, but as the guy that is in charge of building the roster and is the guy that has the ultimate, like, say-so in terms of making a move or not, like, it's his responsibility to put a winner on the field. Now, there's a lot of things that have to go right for even if you have all the talent in the world, things could go wrong. Like, what the hell were the Phoenix Suns the last couple of years?
Right.
You have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, who we've all been making fun of, mostly because of the contract, not because of who he is as a player. He's not worth that contract, but still a quality player. That's why the Clippers were so interested in him and why he will make that team better, in my opinion. So much of it is out of the control of the architect of a team. But I don't know, Dibs, if you think the Giants don't have what it takes on the roster right now to make a postseason spot, then the pressure's on Buster to go and change that. Whether it's a small move like a Marco Scudero-scale move, a Cody Ross-scale move that ultimately turns out to be a home run and helps the Giants win postseason series, like, that's on Buster. I feel pressure on Buster to make the right decision one way or another. And that might mean not making a trade. Like, the right decision could be don't give up Wiz and Hunt, or
that's
don't
right.
give up so-and-so in order to get somebody that might not help that much.
I agree with that part of it, but as far as pressure goes, I think this being, what, the first year of the Buster Posey era,
yeah.
So the expectations are not do it now or else. This is his first year, and so I think you look at what he's already done, bringing in Rafi Devers, you signed Willy Adames, a couple of long-term deals, Chapman long-term, Jung Woo Lee long-term, Logan is here, Robbie Ray for one more year. You've got a very young, controllable bullpen. The only piece that you're probably going to lose in the offseason for sure is Yaz, unless you can get him back for a reasonable deal. But he finally gets to be a free agent at 34 or 35 or whatever.
Congrats, Yaz.
Exactly. But I think that this team is mostly comprised for what it will be next year. You'll have some offseason ads, some free agents, and the rest of it. But I kind of look at this year as the year before the year. Like, next year at this point, then you're going to feel a little bit more pressure. But right now, for me, Buster in year one, he's not feeling the pressure. I would look at Bob Melvin for pressure, because Bob Melvin's been doing this a long time, and he just became the 10th or the 20th winningest manager of all time. I think it's 20th.
I'll check it for you.
But I know he's number 3 all time among managers with no World Series. And it's only Buck Showalter and Gene Mock, rest in peace, who have more wins than Bob without a World Series. And so when you start to look at this Giants team and what the expectations are, the expectations right now are not World Series or bust, but Bob Melvin, as a manager, he's got to get a team into the playoffs and start to advance deep with that team.
Bob Melvin, 20th all-time in wins, 20th. Just past Mike Socha, former manager of the Angels. There's pressure on Bob. If we're talking about, like, this pressure conversation, I suppose, could kind of quickly devolve into, like, hot seat. Like who has more on the line? Like, who has better job security? Who has worse job security? I would agree with you that Buster has way more job security than Melvin. Not that I think either are in any danger, really. But I do hear what you're saying. If we're talking about other individuals on the Giants that I think feel pressure, I think there's a whole hell of a lot of pressure on Rafi Devers. Maybe he isn't necessarily feeling it. Maybe he doesn't feel it. Or maybe he thrives in that pressure. He might. I don't know exactly how that dude's brain works. He does kind of seem to be the guy that doesn't really care what others think and just goes about his business one way or another. But it's kind of like what Willy Adames was facing to begin the year, Dibs, when he signed the richest contract in Giants franchise history. And you come to the team and you're playing shortstop and you struggle mightily, and you get to a point early in or midway through the year when you're still struggling and the team starts to lose games. And that feels really, I don't know, challenging. I would imagine that being really tough. And that's kind of what Devers was going through, I think, a little bit. But I think almost like multiplied by 10, because Devers is five times the hitter that Adames has ever been. And he's the handpicked guy that you just traded for. All eyes are on you. You have the drama of what happened in Boston. You have the drama of, are you going to play first base? And by the way, he's playing first base tonight here at Oracle Park. I feel like there's quite a bit of pressure on Rafi Devers to just show up and hit every single day. And he might answer the call every single time, as he did in Atlanta. But I do feel like there's a good amount of pressure on Devers to be the torchbearer for this lineup the rest of the year.
Again, I don't really see it for this year. And yeah, you want him to come in and play as well as he did in Boston and hit as well as he did. It's a tougher ballpark. It's a new league. It's a new ballpark. It's a new city. It's a lot of different things for Rafi Devers. And I don't look at the pressure being on him just yet. And part of it for me is the contract, where he's inked for, what, eight more till 2033. 2033. And I know the back half of the deal likely will not be the best half of the deal, but you know, you get into next year where you go to spring training with the club and you'll be with the club the whole year. That's when you really start, in my opinion, to ratchet up the pressure. Right now, he's starting to turn it around. Hopefully that's actually a thing and it wasn't just a blip on the radar when he had the good weekend. And hopefully he returns to being the player that we've expected him to be. But I don't think that he's under that much pressure just yet, because the contract he's got till 2033. That's a long time.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, what if he struggles to hit the ball for the majority of the rest of the season? I mean, I know he's still going to be a Giant, or no matter where he is, he's going to get paid all that money. Like, that's happening no matter what. But the conversation and the blame, you're Rafi Devers, you're the best hitter in this lineup. If you struggle, you're getting the blame for the offensive issues. It's just the way it works.
Well, there's enough blame to go around. And this is where, if the whole rest of the team is hitting well and Rafi Devers is struggling, well, then yeah, we can point the finger. For me, there's more pressure on Jung-Hoo Lee. Jung-Hoo Lee has yet to prove it in Major League Baseball. Last year, he played 6 or 8 weeks and he got hurt, and it was a terrible shoulder injury. I've had it and it's brutal. And he came back this year and, you know, he was really good, and then he was really bad. And then now he's just kind of what you'd expect. But for me, the pressure lies more on Jung-Hoo Lee, because the expectation for him has not been met, and he's a guy who's totally unproven. That may wind up being a far-on miss if he doesn't ever excel at the level that they thought he would when they gave him, what, they gave him 6 years and $113 million, a guy with no major league experience. Yeah. And so, you know, the first year was an injury, and you missed whatever, 3/4 of the season. Yeah. Fine, that happens. And then this year, he hasn't really gotten it hot.
He'd been better late.
Right. And he was great for, what, the month of May?
Yeah, maybe like 6 weeks.
Or April.
April, yeah. And then a little bit of May, I think. Like
that's
6
right.
weeks, he was really, really good. And then he was terrible. And now he's kind of, you know, been a little better the last, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah. I think you and I just look at the pressure part of it differently. Not that there isn't pressure on Devers and Adamas because they're making a combined half a bill, almost a half a billion dollars for their total contract amounts.
Wow.
And there's pressure in that, but when you've got a long deal like this and it's fully guaranteed, I think that there's less pressure because, you know, you want to do well, but you're good financially no matter what.
Yeah. I just have the list of the all-time winningest managers up because we had to check something on Bob Melvin. There are two. I'm curious if you could get these. There are two active managers that have more career wins as manager than Bob Melvin. Do you think you can name them?
I mean, I won't even try unless we get the appropriate musical accoutrement here.
Come on.
Scut-da-da-da. Scut-da-da-da.
I'll give you a hint. You should be able to get one of them. For sure.
Well, considering of the 30 managers, I know about 5 of them. It does limit it, but Bruce Bochy's got to have more wins.
He does. He has the 6th most wins all time, 2,224.
Okay.
There's one other. He began managing in 1997, and I believe he's had some starts and stops.
Mm. Huh. Would that be Francona?
Indeed
Terry Francona.
It is.
All right.
Look at you go.
Let's go.
Terry Francona, 13th most wins all time, 2003. The number of wins that he's got. And then Bob Melvin, 20th, the 3rd most wins among active managers.
Yeah, and he's been great. Bob, a couple years in Seattle, 5 in Arizona, a good 11 in Oakland, couple in San Diego, now the Giants. He's very hireable. He's personable. He's a lot of a-bulls. And I love Bob Melvin. I've, you know, get the drop ready. I had a chance to talk to him many times. We had him on a weekly back when we were the flagship of his former team, and he's just a great dude. The one thing about his resume is come October, it hasn't been there for him. 2007, one series and out. 12 and 13 with the A's, couldn't win a series.
Yeah.
14, lost the wild card game, same as 18 and 19. 2020, couldn't win a series. It wasn't until 2022 that he was able to win a series in San Diego.
That's
I think
crazy.
He won the wild card series, and then they got knocked out in the next round. But that's the one thing about Bo Mel is, not that he has anything to prove to me or anybody else, but his resume is glowing. He's been a manager for 22 years, but you got to get in the postseason, and you got to do something in the postseason. It hasn't happened.
It has not happened. You're right. I wonder, Dibs, if we were to take this to Santa Clara and Niners training camp, and not training camp specifically, but just the Niners in general, who do you think is under the most pressure in Santa Clara right now? Because the Niners are in this weird, interesting spot where they have all the remnants of a Super Bowl team. Not that they ever won it, but like they were right there multiple times and have been, you know, they went to NFC Championship game at worst 3 straight years. And their fan base and they themselves were never awarded with actually winning a Super Bowl. So you have that in the back of your mind, yet you have this at least half reset going into this year where you get off of some veteran players that were really key to all of your runs, and you reset with a bunch of youngsters. You bring your old defensive coordinator back in. You pay your quarterback a gigantic amount of money. I wonder what the pressure conversation looks like to you with the 49ers, because I feel like the first name that comes to mind for me, it's specifically the quarterback. It's Brock Purdy and the money that he got. That, to me, feels like the square where most of the pressure falls down on for the 49ers.
And he doesn't get the money till next year, but the money's coming, and I don't want to make it all about the money because the quarterback is always going to be under the most pressure, I would argue, in football. For me, it's Nick Bosa.
Oh, okay.
It's Nick Bosa, and you've got defensive help that is on the way, younger players. You got Huff coming on the other side who's going to help on passing downs. You've got your defensive coordinator that you loved early in your career, and he's back. And last year your defense was not terrible, but it was bad. it was subpar to say the least. And Nick had a good year. It wasn't a great year. And you're paid to be great. And your defense has to be great for your team to win. I ran through it yesterday in all the Shanahan years. When they're a playoff team, they're a top six or seven defense at the worst. Last year, you were 29th in points allowed. You were not a good defense. And so everything on the D goes through Nick Bosa and Fred Warner. And I think it's even more so Nick. If he's disruptive and drawing double teams and he's able to be a force in the run game and allow Fred and D Winters or Nick Martin, if he's going to be the guy who gets the job at linebacker, whoever it is,
yeah,
you've got to be more disruptive up front this year to allow your defense to thrive. So I think it's Nick Bosa.
That's a good one, because I feel like when we talk about the defense, the first thing that comes to mind for me is, well, Saleh's back, and you're going to have to just hope that the rookies and the second-year guys hit. And if they do, you'll be great. If they don't, good luck. There is a world where Fred plays at an all-pro level, and you expect that, and Bosa kind of reestablishes himself as one of, if not the best, pass rusher in the NFL, and even an okay second year in a rookie class is enough for the defense to be good enough to where you win a lot of games and have a chance to win a Super Bowl. Like, you don't have to be the best of the best on defense to win it all. Obviously, it helps. You got to have some stars and some playmakers that can make a play over the course of a game to really change momentum. But you can win a Super Bowl 28-27. The Niners haven't been able to do that, obviously. But Bosa gets back to a spot, Dibs, where he's approaching 20 sacks on a year or something like that. Not that I'm going to predict that, but that's where he was like on pace for almost year in and year out, getting near that number. And then the last 2 years, ever since he got his contract, the numbers haven't been there in that regard. I wonder where you fall in the numbers versus production conversation, because for so many of us that just watch the games on TV, Dibs, and maybe don't have access to the all 22 and are breaking it down at a really minute level and are looking at every single pass rush snap and like, well, here he took on two guys. He didn't make the play, but he opened the hole that allowed Dre Greenlaw or Fred Warner to come in and clean up the running back, or the blitzer, the corner came off the edge, and the reason why the tackle didn't pick him up was because he was so worried about Nick Bosa. Where do you fall in that conversation? Because so many of us are just so simple and are like, well, his sack numbers dropped this year. He wasn't nearly as good. That's not really the case, though, sometimes with Nick Bosa.
Right, and I do think you have to look beyond just the sack, and you look at things like pressures and defensive win rate, quarterback hits, other things that I think will indicate what sort of productivity the player had beyond the sack, because the sack can be a little bit elusive. So Nick Bosa comes around the edge in that wide nine, and he blows past the tackle, and the quarterback sees him coming, and he steps up into the breach, and the D tackle comes in and just absolutely mauls him. And Kalia Davis, or Okawanu.
There you go.
Got the Brankin
Sam Okawanu.
Okawanu, yeah.
You can just call him Sam O if you want.
Whoever that person is, if he happens to just eventually beat his man and the quarterback runs into him and you tackle him and Nick doesn't, you get the sack. Nick gets the pressure, but you get the sack. So I think that looking at just sacks is a little too limiting for a guy like Nick Bosa.
Yeah, he had 18.5 sacks in 2022 when he was the defensive player of the year. The last 2 years combined, Dibs, and he's played 31 games in the last 2 years, 19.5 sacks. So in the last 2 years, only one more sack than he had the previous year alone. 18.5 sacks in 2022, 19.5 over the course of the last 2 years. Now, if you were to ask him, he might tell you, well, I haven't been as good at finishing plays, but there's no doubt that having guys around you is a big part of that. And that's where I think maybe this is entirely unfair, Dibs, and this should not be put on a rookie. I feel like there's a fair amount riding on Mykael Williams. And if you want to call it pressure on the youngster, I mean, that's the conversation that we're having. Sure, I think there's pressure on Mykael Williams, and maybe from a larger perspective, pressure on Robert Saleh to make Mykael Williams work. Because if you get Mykael Williams in there and he falls flat and doesn't do what the Niners drafted him to do, immediately, whether it's fair or not to him, it might not be, you might be looking at another 10-sack year for Nick Bosa as opposed to 15 or more.
Yeah, Nick had 9 last year, and I'm looking at the list right here. Trey Hendrickson, currently not in camp.
Yes.
He had 17.5, and he also led in pressures with 54. Nick Bosa was 8th in pressures with 37, so he was a little further down in sacks with his 9, but pressures, he was up there. And, you know, you get into things like quarterback knockdowns, he's top 10. Hurries, he was 13th. So a lot of the non-sack metrics would tell you that Nick Bosa wasn't bad. He wasn't best in football. Like, he's behind Micah Parsons and Hendrickson and Crosby and a lot of these, and Myles Garrett. He's in that group, though, of top 6 to 8 in football. And Mykel Williams, it's unfair to put that much pressure on him, but it's also fair to put that much pressure on him. You're a first-round pick, and they took him because they wanted him to have an impact immediately, which makes me think about another guy who I think is under pressure, and that's Ricky Pearsall. They used first-round capital last year when nobody thought they needed a wide receiver. Well, they did it because they believed in him, and now Debo is in Washington. Ayuk is out with the pup. Cowing has got a hammy. All right, Ricky, this is why we drafted you. Juwan hopefully is going to continue playing, and he gets signed, and he's there, but right now, if you come out with your 2-receiver set and you're starting week 1, it's Juwan and Ricky Pearsall. So Ricky needs to go out and be the player he was the last 3 games of the year, and he needs to be a dude that you can rely on in the pass game.
And what happens if, 1, he can't stay healthy, or 2, he just can't put it together consistently early in the year? I don't know what the offense looks like at that point.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you've got DeMarcus Robinson, who likely will be suspended, and it's usually 3 games for a DUI. Yeah. I think you go into the season expecting a 3-gamer. Ayuk likely out for 4 weeks, maybe longer, as we heard from people earlier in the week about the expectation for Ayuk. I think it'll be closer to 8 games.
Shanahan said, we hope in the first half of the season.
Right, which would be 8.5 games, so... Yeah. I think 8 games is more likely that he misses as opposed to 4 games. And so, yeah, you've got Juwan, and if it's Ricky and Ricky can't stay healthy, then where are we going? And, you know, I know you've got Equanimeous St. Brown, who's in camp, and they added another camp body.
Quintez Cephas.
Thank you. Quintez Cephas is now
Detroit
a camp body.
Detroit Lions legend.
You got camp bodies all over the building, but do you have actual receivers? So for me, the pressure is on Ricky Pearsall. They use first-round capital because they thought that you could be the guy. You got shot last year, and eventually, by the end of the year, he was showing signs that he could be a dude.
Yeah, he was good at the end of the year. That Lions game, I mean, and I were there, right?
My sister was there. I was actually out sick.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I didn't make that one. Your boy was on the IL. I think I had the vid at that point.
That was the Monday night game, right? Yeah, Monday night.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Willard and I that were doing the show from down there in Santa Clara, and then you walk over right after the show and you go up there, and I'm looking out from the press box, and you just see Ricky all over the place in that game. I was really, really impressed.
I was set to have, you were going to do the show anyway, because it was my sister's birthday. Shout out Hurricane Gale, who turned, we try to talk about numbers that big, but she had gotten 8 seats, and we were going to have a full-on like family rager, and they actually went on and did anyway, but I was on the list, the injured list. I couldn't answer the bell. But that was a fun game to watch at home.
You were on the injured list, much like a lot of the Niners were at that point in the season.
No doubt.
Yeah.
But again, for the pressure, for me, I would look at Ricky Pearsall, and if you want to go even further down the pressure list, Deomador Lenore, where he got a nice contract, and you don't have Charvarius Ward anymore. So now you're our guy. You're our lockdown corner. The pass rush should be better this year than it was last year, so go out there and lock people down.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be the torchbearer for that unit, corners and safeties, especially early in the year. Shanahan said, I don't remember if this was on Tuesday or he said it on Wednesday, but he essentially said, we're going to have an open competition at safety to begin the year because Malik Mustafa is in the same camp as Ayuk, and also Curtis Rourke, rookie quarterback out of Indiana. Not that the Niners are expecting him to impact them at all this year. They hope he doesn't, because if he does, that would mean some dramatic things happen to their other quarterbacks. But all 3 of those dudes, specifically Ayuk and Mustafa the safety, he said, quote, we hope they're back in the first half of the year. So if Mustafa isn't ready, Dibs, to begin, and he's not going to be. And Shanahan says there's an open competition at safety. You don't know who the hell is going to start alongside Lenore and Renardo Green, most likely at the two safety spots. It also probably doesn't mean a whole lot of good for Jair Brown if he is like the incumbent guy in that group, and the word from your coach is an open competition is going to happen for both of those spots. That generally means bad things for the guy who's been in the building already. So we'll see how that plays out. But just because of how up in the air that position is, I think it just magnifies the importance of Diamador.
Without a doubt, and just the secondary in general, because you've got a lot of young players and new faces, and like you talked about, you've got a competition at safety, and you know the coordinator is back, and this defense has always been predicated on having a great front seven, and the secondary can thrive not having to cover as long if the front seven is getting home, and I would expect that the defensive line is going to be better than last year, and so the secondary's job shouldn't be quite as tough.
Yeah. When we got this that just came in from the 510 on the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line, and Green has a hamstring injury. That just happened today. Indeed it did. The 510 talking about Renardo Green, he suffered a hamstring in practice today. Does not seem like it's terrible, but Shanahan did not talk today. So we'll see what the consensus is once Shanahan talks again, which I believe will be Sunday because the team is off tomorrow. Shanahan will likely talk on Sunday, and of course, we'll keep you updated here on 95.7 The Game and on our socials, wherever you are, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you go, at 95.7 The Game. I think as a result of that, the 262 makes a good point as well from the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorneys text line. We're talking about Jair Brown. Maybe Jair Brown is the one that's low-key under pressure because he might not have a job if he does not perform well here in training camp. We will see. We started this conversation on the Niners portion, Dibs, with me throwing out Brock Purdy, and I know you poo-pooed it a little bit.
Well, it's I think it's standard, right?
Where does Brock fall, though, in terms of pressure on all the other names that we've talked about? Where does he rank for you? Because for me, I think it's clear number one, and maybe part of it is just because he is the quarterback.
Yeah.
But there's an extra added level when he's the guy that you paid hundreds of millions of dollars to lock him up for years to come.
I get that, and again, I don't think that the big money really hits till next year, so for me, the money part isn't the big issue now.
It's not about the money now, it's just about the principle of giving it to him.
Agreed,
in the first place.
And I didn't mean to poo-poo it. I just look at the quarterback as the high-pressure guy as the easy answer. It's going to be the answer for every single team. You could look at any team across the National Football League, and I think you could look at the quarterback and say, yeah, they're the one under the most pressure. You've got the ball in your hands on every offensive snap. And if Brock Purdy is bad, they aren't going to be a great team. If Brock Purdy's okay, or if Brock Purdy's great, they can be great. I do think a team kind of goes as the quarterback goes. So I do think that he's under a lot more pressure this year than he was last year. Although last year, coming off that great year and a Super Bowl appearance, there was pressure to do it again. And now the pressure for Brock lies not in the contract, but in the ability for him to do it again. Because 2 years ago, wow, phenom, top five in the MVP. Last year, a step back, still good, more than serviceable. He was a good quarterback, yeah. But now it's, was that year 2 years ago a fluke? Or are you the guy from last year? That to me is where the pressure lies.
I think the pressure lies on Brock in the sense that now you are just, obviously part of it is your play. You have to be good. Obviously, if this team is going to go anywhere, you have to be good. But the Niners are in so much more of a tight spot now financially because of the contract that you got. And if for whatever reason you show to not be good enough, and this is not, you know, Brock's fault, the Niners gave him the contract, but just the nature of what happens when you get a contract, Dibs, if things go poorly for you, you're the reason why the team has to undergo craziness just to get out from under the contract or whatever the situation is. So maybe it's not necessarily, I mean, it would be Brock's fault if he doesn't play well enough to earn the contract or to prove the Niners right. But the pressure is just, okay, we committed not just money, but like the financial well-being of this organization rests on you proving us right, Brock. And if you prove us wrong, I don't know what the hell we're going to do until this contract expires.
That's fair.
That's where the pressure comes from to me.
I get it, and the pressure then for me in that construct falls more on Lynch and Shanahan, because let's just play that out, that scenario. Brock this year is not only what he was 2 years ago, but he's not as good as he was last year. More careless mistakes, maybe some ball handling in bad weather, just you know, showing the regression that makes you understand why he was the last pick in the draft. So if that happens you wind up, you know, 7-10 or 8-9 with a mostly healthy year, and Brock takes a step back, well, then the pressure for me, that goes to Shanahan and Lynch, because you were the ones who vouched for him. You were the ones who signed him to this. And yeah, it's pressure on Brock too, because he's the player. But then the attention swings toward the guys who gave him all that dough.
Yeah, I hear you. 888-957-9570, Dibs. It is a Friday. And we're past 5:30 on a Friday. Do you know what that means?
It means either, hang on, guys, I'm at the dog park, or we go to the Hayward Hills.
We are headed to the Hayward Hills because,
okay.
That was a really late buzzer.
It was an either or. It wasn't a guess.
Very late buzzer.
I just wanted to do my Gene in Oakland, which I think is lightweight elite.
It is pretty good.
Hey, guys, it's Gene in Oakland.
We are headed, though, to the Hayward Hills because it is a Friday afternoon. And Kurt has called in, and he wants to weigh in. Kurt, what's up? You're on with Dibs and Grandy. How you doing?
Hey!
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 Willard
and Dibs, the best sports boys in town. Willard and Dibs and Grandy, best sports boys in town.
How you doing, brother? What's got you going today, Kurt?
Well, you know what's going on today. You've been talking about the great team of the 49ers. Well, let me tell you something. That's a bunch of crap that they're stating that they're rebuilding team. Whoever calls in and states that, they don't know what they're talking about. That's far from rebuilding. I'm going to tell you why. First of all, we signed $1 million quarterback, Purdy. That's number one. And he's going to have a great year because you have his running back back. He has Trent Williams over there. The big tank is going to blow everybody down. They got a rebuild offensive line. They got Kittle, which is probably the best tight end in the league. He was last year. Then on the defense side of it, you got my boy. My boy came back, Robert Saleh. I've been asking for him for quite some time. They brought him back. And you know what the ranking on him is?
What is it?
Guess what his ranking is. This is a stat. He's ranked number six. A defense coach of this year, number six, and the coach, Shanahan, is ranked number seven. That's a stat. Look that up, and let me tell you another stat. The 49ers defense, the front four, Robert Saleh, what do you think he's made of? He's made of a front four defense. That's what he does. He's a hell of a defensive coordinator. He's going to turn this team around with Fred Warner, who's healthy. Bosa's going to be healthy. You watch out this year. We got a stupid little easy schedule. We should win 11 games straight and make the playoffs. And Purdy's going to have a big season. And the coach, he's a scientist as an offensive coordinator. They're not going anywhere but uphill this year. Forget about rebuilding anything like that. That's not happening, fellas. Forget it.
I love it, Kurt. Hey, Kurt, let me ask you. If somebody comes up to you and says, the Rams, they're going to win the NFC West, what would you tell them?
Get out of here!
It would not be a Friday after 5:30 without Kurt in the Hayward Hills. Look it up, Dibs. It's a stat.
It's a stat, Grandy, and that's my favorite. It's a stat.
Robert Saleh, the sixth-ranked defensive coach. Shanahan, the seventh. That's a stat, brother.
That's right. And I don't
sounds
know.
Sounds more like just a personal ranking to
that's
me.
That's right, but you just never know. You know, stats and rankings, they can be they can be conflated. They can be blended to whatever your need is. That's great, though. Kurt and Hayward Hills. Nothing gets you ready for the weekend
absolutely
like that. And you thought that he was going to leave you out. Willard and Dibs.
It took him a sec.
And Grandy. He got you in there.
Well, he gave the Willard and Dibs first. Then he circled back, went Willard and Dibs again, and then mentioned me. And
then
I felt very special. Thank
and
you,
it's
Kirk.
Good because you are officially now one of the best sports boys on town.
Let's go. I've been waiting for that.
That's it.
I have been waiting for that.
It's no better.
Let's sneak in one more call before we hit our last break of the day. James is in Hayward and wants to add. James, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs. How you doing?
Hey guys, happy Friday. So just wanted to chime in with regards to Brock Purdy and pressure.
Yeah, what do you got?
I think there shouldn't be any pressure on him. He got his bag. He got his contract. If at most the pressure would have been last year. And I'm thinking that in my lifetime, and I'm hoping I get 50 more years, I don't think I'm going to see a Mr. Irrelevant paid this much ever. So I don't think there's any pressure on him. I would think it would be the opposite. He's already getting paid, and all he needs to do is just go out there and play. So there's nothing outside of the game that he's about to play in front of him that's going to add to pressure in his life, I would hope.
Interesting, James. I mean, I like the way that you're breaking it down. I just personally don't think that's how it works at this point, Dibs. It does not matter where you got drafted. If you were undrafted, if you were the first pick, if you were in the third round, if you were the last pick, once you signed that contract, you wave bye-bye to your origin story. Now you're suddenly a high-paid quarterback, bottom line.
True, and I think the quarterback is always going to be one under that sort of pressure. And even though the money doesn't kick in until next year, you do have that contract that's sitting out there. And so the way people look at him, not only locally but nationally, has changed.
Yeah. No doubt. Hey, coming up at 7 o'clock tonight, a little more than an hour away, the Valkyries take on the Dallas Wings. Beckers is in town. You're not going to want to miss it, and you can hear the game right here on 95.7 The Game or on the Valkyries channel on the Odyssey app. Just search, download the app and search Valkyries. Brought to you by the San Francisco Sheriff's Office. Your future begins here. It's a Friday. We've got one more segment left with you here on 95.7 The Game. It's Willard and Dibs. And Dibs, did you see what the Milwaukee Brewers did post-game today in Milwaukee?
I saw that. I glanced at it, and I was like, "Is this what is this?"
They held an alumni home run derby.
Pretty fun.
What? That's, it sounds awesome.
Yep.
I want to pick your brain, the listener's brain, about what would a Giants alumni home run derby look like. We can throw out some names when we come back. Sound right. Good?
Oh, sounds great. Right. Got to move the fence in, though, unfortunately.
Might have to. Although Barry could probably still clear that thing in right field.
So it was all Brewers. It was Brewers versus Brewers?
Yeah.
And like two drafted teams,
yeah.
Basically? Okay.
Yeah. It was really, really cool. And I wonder if some other teams might consider doing something like that. We could make our own Niners or Giants alumni home run derby team. We'll do that when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you, wrapping things up next on 95.7 The Game.
This is a stat. Look that up. That's a stat. Look that up. The best sports boys in town. Willard and Dibs and Grandy, best sports boys in town.
That made my day. Now I can head into the weekend with a smile on my face.
That's pretty good. He got it in there,
yep.
You know. And he had one windup where I thought he was going to cuss. And I mean, he
one.
Well, there was one. It was a big windup, and then he didn't deliver on the bomb, which is good.
He's learning.
Well,
he's learning.
We'll see. You know, we're taking one call at a time.
Look that up.
That's a stat.
It's pretty good.
That's a stat.
That's a stat.
That up.
The funniest thing is it's not a stat. It's just a ranking. I don't
Correct.
Even know what the ranking was. But
Look that up. That's a stat.
I'll look it up.
Robert Saleh is the number 7 defensive coordinator in the league. Look that up.
That's a stat.
That's a stat. It's good. He was happy that Saleh came back.
Oh, I mean, to be fair, I think he has come on this station, on this show, and said they got to get Robert Saleh back.
Yeah. So
he could do a victory lap for that, and I won't be upset
at
him.
And I wouldn't say that Robert Saleh is under any pressure, as we talked about pressure. I mean, he's under some pressure because he's an NFL defensive coordinator, and maybe the pressure would be him wanting to get another crack at being a head coach. But you come back here to a place where you were very successful, and your boss, Kyle Shanahan, really likes having you around, and couple of the defenders who were here when you were here the first time are back, and they're happy you're here, and you're coming off a year where the coordinator struggled and your defense wasn't good, so he's probably not under that much pressure, to be honest.
I mean, he's got to be good for the Niners to be good, but a lot of it is going to be, well, who do they have and how do the players play? One thing that we mentioned we wanted to get to really quick, Dibs, was what the Brewers did today.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee, it's the 25th season of Brewers baseball at what they now call American Family Field. So to celebrate 25 seasons of baseball at that park, they did a variety of different things to celebrate, including holding a Brewers alumni home run derby, which featured team captains Ryan Braun and Carlos Gomez. They got to draft the team of the following players. You'll recognize some, maybe not all of these names. Keon Broxton, Prince Fielder, Yovani Gallardo, pitcher in the home run derby. He could hit a little bit as a pitcher. Bill Hall, Corey Hart, Casey McGee, Giants legend Casey McGee, Niger Morgan, and Eric Thames. Really cool, like, idea. You just have these old dudes from a variety of different, not eras, but years. They didn't all play on the same team. Some of them obviously shared the diamond at the same time. They all come back, and they hold an alumni home run derby. And I don't know, that just like struck me as something incredibly cool that a baseball team could do for fans. Because you imagine what it would be like if Barry Bonds strapped them up again and participated in a home run derby at Oracle Park in 2025. Could you imagine?
It would be cool. And part of it is predicated on these guys still being able to hit home runs. The bit kind of dies if you've got guys who still can't do it. And I'm looking at the all-time list of Giants home run hitters. Barry Bonds second to Willie Mays. But Mel Ott, Willie McCovey no longer with us. Matt Williams is number five, so you could roll him out of the third base coaching box.
He might not be able to hit one out anymore.
I mean, maybe. Orlando Cepeda was number six. He's passed. Bobby Thompson was seven. Bobby Bonds is eight. He's passed. Will Clark would be next up.
He could probably still get one out to the short portion,
no
right?
doubt. And tied for 10th, Brandon Bell.
Brandon Bell!
And Jeff Kent is also number 10.
Yeah,
so
imagine you got Bonds, you got Belt, you got Pablo back.
Good call.
Just to participate in a home
Jeff
run derby.
Kent, maybe you go Bonds, Kent, and Burks against Belt, Pablo, and...
Get Posey out of the suite.
Or maybe
100 top.
Pence, right?
Yeah, 100 Pence is a good one.
You go for the pre-World Series era against the World Series era.
Mm.
Maybe you bring back the big cat, Andreas Galarraga.
Go hit that Coke bottle again,
man,
big cat.
That was one that I will never forget. 500 feet to left center. Thing was a poke. But that would be fun.
I mean, they could sell tickets for that. It didn't even have to be a game day.
Right.
That could be in the offseason and they could sell tickets for that.
I mean, promote it. And they're so good at promotions and... What, tomorrow is Steph Curry bobblehead day? Is that right?
Yes.
And Steph will be in the building, and it'd even be fun to see a home run derby with, like, Steph Curry participating, for example, and seeing what he could do.
Well, it's like what they do at the All-Star game. The Monday is the home run derby. Maybe it's early in the day Monday. I don't know exactly how it all works, but they sometimes do the celebrity softball game. And they put fences in that are, like, I don't know, 200 feet from home plate or something, as opposed to 350 or whatever. And you have a variety of people that participate, including former big leaguers. Like, I think Hunter Pence has participated before. That's maybe somewhat similar to this kind of idea. And maybe the Brewers got it from All-Star Weekend, and they kind of stole that idea from there. But, in a time when you're trying to do as much fan service as possible, like, this seems like an easy way to treat your fans as something cool that's unique.
Right. As long as the players would be willing to do it. And, you know, if you're Barry Bonds, I don't know if you're, you know, that motivated to get back out there and put a couple more in the cove, but fans would certainly love it. That's for sure.
It would be terrible if, say, one of these older guys, maybe Barry or maybe Will or whoever it is, did, like, take a big cut and then they just hurt themselves.
no doubt.
That could happen.
Or if you when it's a hitter's park in Milwaukee, but it's not here.
Yeah.
So you find that all of a sudden, you know, Barry doesn't have that pop anymore. And then the whispers, and then the chatter. So
yeah, you're right. It doesn't really seem like something that Barry would sign up for.
Right.
I would love to see it, but I don't imagine he would ever commit to it.
Yeah, and on the surface, wow, what an unbelievable idea. And even if you did it where, like, for example, tonight, it's the Mets, right, in town.
Yeah.
So you did your former Giants against the former Mets. So you bring back, you know, Daryl Strawberry or
Carlos Delgado.
Kevin Mitchell hits for both teams. You know, you find a way to make it former Mets against former Giants.
That would be fun.
A little alumni versus alumni game.
That would be fun. Another week has come and gone, Dibs, and we don't have resolution to Kuminga.
Right.
We don't have resolution to Juwan Jennings, although for Juwan, not really another week has come and gone, just this week has come and gone, and we don't yet have a Giants trade in addition to Rafi Devers. By the time Willard steps back in and takes over these airwaves at 1:48 on Monday, do you think any of those three things are different?
No.
No?
I don't. I mean, at Kuminga, it feels like we're just getting further away. We're not getting closer. Juwan Jennings, I do think that they will get some resolution at some point. I don't know what the pressure point is on either side. He's not holding in. He's playing.
Yeah.
And they're happy about it. I do think that his request is still in place about wanting more money. I think that his trade request kind of loses a little steam when you're out there playing. And Buster Posey, I don't know what the deal would be. I think he's got to figure out how he's going to get through the weekend before he tries to bring in a new pitcher.
So no
I think it's
on
no
all
across
fronts.
The board, yeah. And I'm going to have to apologize to Willard for not getting these things done while he was gone.
Yeah, what the hell?
Like, what are we doing here? We're just
what
sitting here gabbing.
What are we doing here?
We got
nothing
done.
When I found out that Willard was going to be off for a week and a half for his wedding and his honeymoon, and I was going to be filling in, I was thinking, there's like a 99% chance that the Kuminga resolution happens while I'm here, and that's going to be great. We've got 1 minute left, Dibs.
We've got 1 minute. Refresh his Twitter. You know, what's... You got to go to Shams one last time. Go to Anthony Slater, his co-worker.
Nothing. There's nothing, Dibs.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
I mean, it's a letdown, but it's not a total shock.
No, so. I mean, at this point, but once Willard left and you would have asked me, do I think it's going to happen by the time end of the show Friday, I would have said no. But when it was officially brought to me that I'd be filling in for this week and a half, I said, hell yeah.
Right.
But now that we're here, no, it makes sense the way that it's played out.
And so I'm going to say the same thing as it pertains to getting it done by Monday. I just don't see it. Yeah. Frankly, I don't see it.
Me neither. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It's best of the game. And leading things off is the crossover when it was Steiny and Evan, Dibs and myself. Dibs, great week. See you coming up on Monday, huh?
Yeah, have a great weekend. Enjoy the game tonight.
You too.
And we'll talk to you on Monday.
I will. All right, for Dibs, for Luke, for Ken, I'm Mark signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a good weekend. We'll talk on Monday on 95.7 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.